time, so.
We're going to get started. The Committee on Local Government and Metropolitan Affairs. Today is Monday, February 25th. I'm going to call the meeting to order. However, we do not yet have a quorum, so we are going to approve the minutes after we have a quorum. The hearing today is to talk about the effect of a possible airline merger on the Metropolitan Airports Commission. And with that, I believe Jack Lanner, the chair for the Metropolitan Airports Commission, and Tom Anderson are going to tell us. Please come to the table, state your name for the record, and go ahead. I want everyone to know that feel free to interrupt and ask questions. Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Glad to be here. I feel it's important to have the opportunity to fill your committee in on a lot of things that have been going on really over the past 2 to 3 years. Can you hear okay?
Mm-hmm.
Goodbye. At the Metropolitan Airport Commission. And the talk of the day is the potential merger coming forward. How will it affect the Metropolitan Airport Commission, the MSP, our hub status, and jobs in Minnesota? And of course, that's of great concern to all. We have been, over the course of the last 2 to 3 years, really, analyzing various merger situations. We've had analysis completed that give us some idea of different scenarios that could occur in a forward-looking environment, not knowing, of course, that any of those merger potentials would come to fruition or not, as we still do not today. We really have no more data today as far as a merger is concerned than we did last week. We also have dealt with bankruptcies of Northwest Airlines and other airlines at the Airport Commission. And through those bankruptcies, and Northwest in particular, we utilize it not only as an opportunity to protect and add caveats to the monies that are due the state of Minnesota, the bonds, the $245 million bonds from Northwest Airlines, but also to create more of a partnership in that we established revenue sharing of concessions revenue to a small degree, but it does create somewhat of a partnership that is good for all airlines. We also were able to extend the lease, get commitments for a longer-term lease through 2020. We were able to consolidate the short-term gates at the airport. Short-term gates are gates under the control of Northwest Airlines or its affiliates that we, as the MAC, have a right to utilize in the event competitors, I would say, or new carriers, new entrant carriers had an interest and a need, and we had a need for more gates. Those were spread around the airport. We were able to consolidate those into 6 contiguous gates on the D-pod, which is a popular and easy, convenient gate system to get to at the airport. And we acquired the jet bridges, the remaining jet bridges, that allow us then to have access in a negative impact scenario. Pittsburgh Airport under U.S. Air went through a massive de-hubbing process and consolidation of that airline and ended up with dozens and dozens and dozens of empty gates, many of which they had trouble utilizing until they had acquired the jet bridges. So it's a control mechanism for gates in a negative scenario, which we do not anticipate, but it's still good to be prepared. Extending the lease for Northwest Airlines through 2020, which assures hub status, but it also restructured the lease agreement for all airlines at the airport, making us a more competitive, structured system. while we're often due a terrific staff that's been there a long time that pays attention to detail, highly rated operational airport. And that's a good thing. We're also now, with our new agreements that we put through a low-cost large hub airport. We're in the bottom half of cost per plane passenger for all airlines that operate out of NIT. That's a good thing. That means we're competitive on a national basis and more. So some of the reasons that we did that, of course, is looking forward through the bankruptcy process. Northwest Airlines accepted the bond, the loan agreements, as opposed to rejecting them in bankruptcy, resolved the Duluth facility situation, extended their leases, received lower costs, received some lease reductions, but made commitments on the backside so that in the end has worked out well. Plus, you know, as I said, we made the airport more competitive for any potential new entrant carrier. That said, in the merger scenario, we foresee all sorts of different possibilities, but one is that we remain very concerned until we actually see what structure may come forward if it does, and that's where we can react. We're relatively confident that our hub status will remain, and we'll do fairly well. There's not a significant amount of overlap in the Delta Northwest scenario. Also, we're positioned well in that scenario as the West Coast, the most furthest West Coast hub outside of Salt Lake City that would survive or that would exist in a Delta Northwest merge scenario. And that would theoretically create some possibilities. But there's also certain negatives. If we lose the corporate headquarters in Minnesota to Atlanta, those are high-paying, sought-after jobs. Of course, very good, and we don't wish to lose those. So we're not cautiously optimistic. I would say we're very concerned, actually, until we see what they come home with. That's it in a nutshell. The loans that they have, we have some arrows in the quiver. When we get to the table, and we'll be at the table if there is a merge scenario, because the $245 million in loans are basically amortized through 2022. There is acceleration clauses under a headquarters reduction or elimination category. If they move the headquarters, those come into play and kick into gear. There's a hubbing requirement that they have to maintain a certain volume of connecting passenger activity as a percentage of total activity at the airport. And so we have those things that Tom Anderson, General Counsel, has more details on if anybody would like to discuss those. So we're really, at this point, in a wait and see what's going to happen. But we're well prepared. We've been accumulating as much data as possible and as much past data and forward-looking data, along with the Department of Employment and Economic Development, Commissioner McElroy, who's been accumulating state data and state comparative data with cities like Atlanta, et cetera, et cetera, so that when or if there is an announcement, we will be prepared point out and make sure they're aware of the positives that Minnesota has for all facets of their operation to maintain and control as many jobs as possible.
Questions? Representative Distin?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, I'm interested in knowing what role the federal government plays in a potential merger, and then what, if any, contact that the MAC has had with Congress.
Mr. Lanner?
Well, I'll comment to the contact with Congress. We've had very little contact with Congress at this point. We've certainly received letters, the letters that have been written and the concerns of various senators and Representative Oberstar, et cetera, on their positions, but have had no real direct contact or negotiation, or not negotiations, direct contact or discussions at this time. As far as what role the federal government plays, I would probably defer that to Tom Anderson.
Mr. Anderson, go ahead and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Tom Anderson, General Counsel of the Airports Commission. The Department of Justice has the responsibility to review mergers of this type to assess whether it believes there are any potential anti-competitive impacts. And that's a process that can take several months, many months in complex cases. And so any merger such as the Northwest Delta that's currently being discussed or any of the others that are of that magnitude would require formal notice to the Justice Department and a review under the, it's called the Hart-Scott-Rodino Act. And that typically involves a gathering of a great deal of economic data and looking at potential market competition impact. That's their sole focus. What's the impact on competition? It doesn't need federal government approval, but it does require review by the Justice Department, and they have the right to challenge any merger if they wish by starting a lawsuit, as they did in the proposed Northwest Continental merger several years ago. Congress has no direct role in it. Congressman Oberstar has indicated he intends to hold hearings if there is going to be any, if there is a proposed merger, and he's the chair of the committee that would have jurisdiction to consider this. And then in the Senate, the Commerce Committee is also contemplating whether or not to hold hearings, and Senator Klobuchar is on that Commerce Committee. So those are the two primary congressional roles. It appears to be more, as I say, there's no congressional approval required.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, to either Mr. Lanz or Mr. Anderson, under what scenarios would you contemplate that the MAC would not want to weigh in with either Congress and their hearings or with the Justice Department? Is it assumed that MACs will weigh in on any of those scenarios? Offer to testify in Congress, provide information to the Justice Department, etc. Or would it be, I'm sorry, or would it be MAC's intention to sit back and wait to be asked?
Mr. Lanner.
Great question. I certainly hope there's no offense taken with the answer, but realistically, we do not have a position at this point. We're neither for nor against the merger scenario. We're very concerned about a potential merger, but until there's anything to work with or look at or scenarios that are put forth, we could speculate on a million different issues, and I'd rather not, because I don't know how we would take any of those scenarios in and of themselves without the whole picture.
Representative Diskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and Mr. Lanners, no offense taken with your answer, all right? But no offense with my rebuttal when I say that I can't possibly imagine that MAX isn't at least analyzing the situation, has some idea of the potential consequences of the merger that would be detrimental to the area, and preparing a point by point, developing a case, to protect the citizens of Minnesota, to protect the integrity of the airport itself, so that we remain a viable and strong player in the region. So I'm hoping and I'm assuming that is going on in the background, all right, while no official action has been taken or official statement has been made. I'm trusting that behind the scenes there's a lot of people working very hard at analyzing this situation.
situation.
Mr. Landers?
I think you can count on that. We have been looking at different scenarios, and I believe really it goes back to even the airline lease agreement. We put some ammo in the system so that if and when a scenario comes forward, we have actually have something to work with. We have leases, we have expanded leases, long-term leases, we have money that's owed the state that has guarantees of payment. We do have things that that will aid us in any dealings that come forward to try and maximize the jobs and the growth potential and the air service for Minnesota, and that's our goal and objective, to have as many of those things as possible.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair, Mr. Lanners, what is the difference in the impact to the airport itself if Minnesota remains a corporate headquarters versus a hub? Now, obviously, to the economy and to some high-paying jobs, particularly in the area around the airport where people would live, there's an impact to the economy. But is there an impact to the airport due to having a major carrier called Minneapolis or Minnesota home versus simply calling it a hub airport? Am I making myself clear?
Mr. Lanners.
I'm not sure. I think it's always good to, I probably won't answer this, what you're looking for, but maybe I will. Over the corporate headquarters and large corporate headquarters are good to have. There's image, there's spin-off, there's law firms, there's marketing firms, there's spin-off jobs that are related to it. It's not just the jobs of the headquarters but there's a lot that goes along with that, so they're very good to have. There's no doubt about it. To compare it and say, if you're saying a hub or a headquarters, if you had a choice, I wouldn't even speculate on that, but I do know that the hub is a very, very important aspect of Minnesota and our airport and the operations and the other 1,900 Fortune 500 corporations that operate out of the state and the many, many, many other businesses and international businesses that operate out of here. So it's an important aspect of them, along with all the jobs that spin off from that. It's approximately 48% of passengers going through Minneapolis-St. Paul Airport. We're connecting passengers. Those are passengers that provide significant revenue in and of themselves for the state. In the passenger facilities charges that we receive from them, and spending money in the terminals and so on and so forth, not to mention the opportunities that that opens up for the route system out of MSP also. And it's estimated that the new Paris route that will be in early April that Northwest announced has an economic value of over $2 million to the Twin Cities. How they come up with that exactly, I can't tell you, but there's people that are experts in that area, and on a European route like that, that is the estimate in excess of $200 million. So there's a lot of benefit derived from hubbing and from the opportunity to have those routes that we may not have if we didn't have those connecting passengers.
Representative Biskin.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, it's my understanding, and correct me if I'm wrong, that the corporate headquarters issue is almost a foregone conclusion. Right? That Minneapolis will lose a corporate headquarters in Georgia, and that the corporate headquarters will go to Atlanta. It sounds to me as if Max's concern right now is, will we not only use the corporate headquarters, but we may also potentially lose hub status, right? It sounds like, and correct me if I'm wrong, while the corporate headquarters issue is an important one to the economic well-being of the greater metro area, the bigger issue for the economic well-being of the airport itself is whether or not they keep hub status, not whether or not they keep corporate headquarters status. Is that true, Mr. Lanners?
Mr. Lanners.
Madam Chair, most likely that economically is probably true. The airport has estimated economic impact of $1 billion, like the professor said, probably a true statement. It's also seemingly obvious based on the media reports that we all see that the headquarters is not looking like it would be here in the area. So, that is how we see it. As far as the hub status, MSP is one of the most profitable, in fact, probably the most profitable hub for Northwest Airlines, and would be a very profitable hub, most likely, for any merged entity. With low cost, high quality operation, and also I pointed out some of the other attributes that we have, being the westernmost outside of Salt Lake City, with great connections to the northern Orient and western United States. So we're concerned, yet have some confidence that we're well positioned to maintain hub status.
I do have a question. Have you looked at the other airline hubs that they currently have to see where MSP fits in terms of their profitability? So would MSP compete effectively with the other, that's Delta, right?
Yes.
We're currently talking about with Delta.
With Delta's hub.
Yes.
Madam Chair, we've looked at the cost, and we've also looked at the overlap between the two systems, because these systems would have to be integrated. So it's, when you're looking at a merger, people often look at what kind of economies there might be, if there are overlapping costs that can be eliminated, for example. So we've approached it more from that perspective. The actual cost of running the airport is an important piece, but it's basically driven by the market that the airline's trying to serve. At least that's what the experts that we've retained have told us. So that they have felt that MSP is a solid hub, well-run, positioned geographically well, and at least there appears to be a strong case to be made for the Minneapolis hub being very secure in a Northwest Delta scenario. Not so much just because we have a good cost structure, but because of where we're located and how this airport fits in the merged route system of these two carriers. And so when you look at those things, the conventional reports, for example, is that Atlanta, Delta hub is very solid. Northwest hubs in Detroit and Minneapolis are very solid, and there are questions being raised about Delta Cincinnati hub and Delta and the Northwest Memphis hub potentially being duplicative. And again, that's just the conventional wisdom until we see a specific proposal where everyone's just kind of guessing to where this is, you know, based on the best information that they have.
But you believe that currently the contacts that we currently have are adequate to secure the state's interest financially with the loan and looking out for the airport over the next till 2020.
We have very solid tools. The incentives that were built into the 1991 loan package
as well as the new lease that we entered into as Northwest emerged from bankruptcy, both contain commitments by the airline to keep its both its hub and its headquarters in the state. Now, there are financial consequences if they don't do that, and so I don't want to leave you with the impression that we, for example, on the issue of the headquarters, that our board has no ability to influence that decision. It may be that that headquarters is going to go, but there would be a significant financial penalty to be paid by the new airline, and they'd have to factor that into their decision making. And certainly, no one from our board has suggested that we wouldn't fully enforce our rights. That's something that clearly we'd have to analyze when a specific proposal is out there.
Keeping in mind, I might add, if I could, keeping in mind that $20 billion merger deal, $245 million that could be accelerated to some extent, isn't huge. It's significant, but it's not huge. There are other items that kick into play that give us some push back. In any merger deal, and that has to do with the concessions, the revenue sharing agreement with all airlines that operate out of MSP. That was created more to have a synergy and a partnership perspective from the food and beverage and retail operations, et cetera, at the airport. And those, in the event, those have the same caveats that in the event hubbing activity were to drop below a certain level or headquarters were moved out of the state, that those could be pulled back. And those are in the neighborhood of $15 million a year, I believe. Correct, Tom?
Representative
Colbert. Madam Chair, I'm sorry I was a little late coming here. In scanning over your documents, I saw when Northwest was in deep doodle and came to the state in the MAC, it was with a complete understanding that the headquarters would never be moved. And quite frankly, when we talk about headquarters and hub, and you want us to choose those two, that's not a choice. The choice should be both of those. And I would expect you to be working for both of those, because that's the Northwest wouldn't exist for Delta to be able to have a merger if it wasn't been for the state to step up into the plate. The second, my question is the original ones that we had in 1991, the covenants, they were not necessarily changed by the bankruptcy. Is that correct?
Mr. Lanner.
That is correct. That was Northwest Airlines did have some rights under bankruptcy laws to reject loan agreements and lease agreements, et cetera, et cetera. They did not do so. They accepted the bond and $245 million loan agreements in their entirety, along with additional tightened language that was added to so that they also extended their leases for the gate system that they occupy now, committing themselves through 2020 to 101 gates. Those are pretty big commitments, and so that's good. You know, the hub and headquarters obviously is certainly an issue, and we'll do our best from what we have, along with the deed of the state, et cetera, and whatever else, to try and keep everything here and grow it if we can.
Madam Chair, glancing at your synopsis here, there's no mention of the Chisholm facility. That was part of the 1991 agreement, I believe, as well. And I know there's been an attempt to renegotiate that at both different times on employment level, but are you working to protect that facility as well?
Our intent would certainly be to make that facility any way possible, and that is not necessarily the function of the MAC, but certainly in our minds.
Yeah. Ma'am, I just except from council, I guess that's a function of IRRB, or is it a function of the state? So maybe if you can ask that question. I know
Mr. Jeter.
Oh, no, sorry. Madam Chair, Representative Solberg, I'm not quite clear on the question. The TISM facility was part of the agreement with the state bonds that were issued, and I mean, all of it was all tied together, but I'm not quite clear on what your question is.
Well, I need some clarification of who needs to be trying to protect that facility. If I recall right, the loan for that forgivable loan came from the IRRB, and I think the contract is with IRRB for that particular facility. And I think the same thing happened in Duluth. That was with the Duluth facility is with Duluth. But I think the state also was part of that bond, and I don't know exactly how the state tied into it. We did appropriate some money from IRRB to in the bankruptcy court to hire a counsel to try to protect our interests, but I think it's important to realize there's more than just the MACA.
And I think I have the information that we're not direct, the Airports Commission is not directly involved in those, so this will be secondhand, but my understanding is that the state, well, there were two statewide facilities, the hangar in Duluth and what evolved into the reservation center in Chisholm. The hangar in Duluth was financed with state-backed bonds of about, ultimately it turned out to be just under $48 million of bonds. Those were effectively paid off as part of the bankruptcy through a claim that the state was able to make against Northwest Bankruptcy. So, I believe Mr. Southen from the formerly from the Department of Finance indicated that the state has been made whole through the stock that was issued in, as a result of that claim, and then they were able to cash that stock out and retire the state bonds, and that property is now being under the jurisdiction of the Duluth Economic Development Agency, and they're leasing that out and attempting to develop that as an aviation facility, not with Northwest, but with someone else, with Cirrus Flight. The Chisholm Reservation Center is currently operating and employing several hundred, 300 to 400 employees. That is tied, as I understand it, to an IRRB arrangement that allows a forgiveness of certain amounts, as Representative Solberg indicated, if Northwest maintains those employment levels. And I'm understanding that it's $8 or $9 million that would potentially be forgiven if they maintain those employment levels. So that's my understanding, as it's been described to me, of the state transactions. But the MAC is not directly a part of those agreements, but because all these packages were tied together, we certainly tried to coordinate with each other in any activities or actions.
Further questions, Representative Hoffman?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was late in coming, so you may have already pursued this. The issue of what has happened at other airports when they lost their hub, and the one that we particularly have some information on is Pittsburgh, which supposedly went from 20 million passengers to 10 million passengers and lost concessions. And do we have other examples of that, and does the MAC have a plan B for effects like that?
Who would like that question?
Well, I'll take a stand as representative. Pittsburgh, which is making some comebacks, had a dramatic effect when U.S. reduced its size and reduced it more and reduced it more. It produces quite a few empty gates. We protected that at MST to some extent with an extended airline lease agreement that effectually for our major hub, Northwest Airlines, leases 101 gates through 2020. They can't reject those. They could have rejected them in bankruptcy, but they're out, and they lived up to their obligations, and they paid off the Duluth facility, and they kept their agreement to repay the $245 million bonds that they have. So that's somewhat difficult for them to do that. They could reduce their activities while continuing to pay rent, so to speak, down their leases for the gates. We have inserted some additional funds that allow us to take back gates as we needed for new engine carriers, etc. A wholesale reduction of hubbing activity, realistically, could drop our connecting passengers by 50% or more. That would open up a tremendous number of gates, more gates than we could possibly fill with new entrance carriers. As far as competitive purposes, we have gates available now. We can find a new entrance carrier that wants to come here. And we can quickly build new gates at the Humphrey Terminal, which is 10 gates right now, is expandable through the 2020 plan, which is on hold right now, but the Humphrey portion of it could be put back into gear, and that could take the Humphrey Terminal to 29 gates as a maximum. That's a lot of gates, and that's a lot of activity. So we're ready for expansion. The traction which you're talking about is why the 2027 is on hold, but we do have leases through 2020, and so we're very concerned until we see what happens in the scenario, although we think competitively we're sitting fairly well to maintain our hubbing activity, and hopefully an emerge scenario would grow that. Did that answer your question?
Yes, Madam Chair, I hear that we're releasing those gates, but should they not fully utilize them, it's the spillover effect, parking and concessions and as you said, connecting routes that don't happen for other passengers, all of which would have an effect. And I don't know if there's a plan B to say, do we...
Mr. Lehner.
I understand. Thank you, Madam Chair. The parking revenues and predominance of concession revenues, et cetera, is derived from our O&D passengers, origination and destination. Our origination and destination out of Minneapolis-St. Paul is growing and has been growing. We don't expect that to change outside of major extenuating circumstances. So really we're talking about the connecting passengers and gate utilization that would change our landed weight and some of those types of things. Those can be weathered in quite a number of ways. And the MAC financially with high bond ratings and maintained bond ratings is really in a good position to weather a reduction in those areas.
Can you tell me, in the event that there was this merger, would there be an impact on the smaller flights from more rural areas of Minnesota coming into the Minneapolis airport?
I know Mr. Anderson has some data with regard to that. I believe, without knowing any of the facts and hypothesizing, we're better off having a strong hub that will service our greater Minnesota areas versus a declining hub that would put our greater Minnesota operations at more risk.
Mr. Anderson?
We certainly can provide the committee, Madam Chair, with a breakdown of departures in the various communities. There are 12 communities that receive scheduled air service, and some of those are under a federal subsidy program called the Essential Air Service Program. Others are provided. They're an important piece of the Northwest hub, and if there's going to be a hub, if the assumption is there would continue to be a hub, I don't think we have any reason to believe that these would be in any more jeopardy under a merger scenario than they are today. And again, that's the kind of underlying premise. Is the Minneapolis hub likely to be strengthened as a result of the merger, or weakened, or stay the same? And at least our best guess at this point is that our hub is pretty solid and isn't going to be affected. This is all obviously very speculative, but that's one of the scenarios. We certainly, as part of the bankruptcy, went through an exhaustive analysis of what happens if the hub goes away. And many of those issues really were addressed both by us, our new lease, and by Northwest in terms of its lowering its overall costs and the big reduction to its employees, both in numbers and in wages. And so they kind of weathered that storm as part of the bankruptcy. And so hopefully we are past that now. Nothing's for certain, but that's at least where we seem to be today.
Great. Other questions from members? Is there anyone else in the audience that wanted to speak about this issue? Do you have anything else to share with us?
We're always here, Madam Chair. If you have other questions, obviously.
Absolutely. Now, did the Senate have a hearing on this as well today?
Yes, they did.
And how did that go? Do you want to enlighten us at all? We were talking about transportation.
Well, it went very well. We did have Commissioner McElroy did present some of the Greater Minnesota data along with some of the economic comparative data of various scenarios that we don't necessarily have access to, but I'm sure would be more than happy to supply to your committee. And they also reviewed some of the past bonding issues from finance to some extent and how it would tie in. But I think we've covered that in some of the and the representative Oberstar letter he has read into the record also.
Great. All right. Hearing no further questions, I'm going to adjourn the meeting. Thank you. We're adjourned.